I mean, it's better than our. Oh, I shouldn't even start about it. I shouldn't even.
No, dude, you can't just start the recording like that.
I shouldn't start about it. I always do that. I always fucking do that.
What?
Little Chuck Norris. Little Chuck Norris.
God damn it. He started it.
You guys start throwing roundhouses? Chat
GPT action.
It's fucking.
Even better.
We have a group chat with some other DM fellows in the podcast space. And it's all about Chuck Norris. And the podcast thing's the Discord group chat is called Chuck Prime.
Okay.
Because we mixed Chuck Norris and Optimus Prime, and it made Chuck Prime. And we're like, yep.
That might be the strongest fusion you could get. It's definitely up there.
We tried things like Chuck Squatch.
Which is badass.
Yeah. Huge feat.
And then...
we got Shrek Norris.
Shrek Norris. Ooh. We got Chuck Diesel.
Chuck Diesel.
Got Chuck Diesel.
Oh my God, I just noticed. Wait, is this a video podcast too, or is it just
audio? So we post video on our YouTube, but 90% of the time it's just audio.
Okay. All right, that's good. I'm gonna move. This is really bad timing. So I really dry skin when it's cold. So I have a bottle of lotion up there next to these tissues.
To Kleenex.
They are not related. I'm dropping those allegations now. I want that to be super clear before we get too deep into this audio.
Oh man, that's I mean,
I have bad allergies and I get dry skin. Don't come at me.
We talked
about video podcast.
Yeah, I saw it out of the corner of my eye and I was like, oh no, I'm gonna get attacked for this.
Well, welcome everyone to another great and fantastic Coffee Table Talk. I am your host, Coffee Horse. With me today, of course, I got my great co-host, The Toast.
Hello.
And then we have our special guest, which is Fireball Studios.
What's up, everybody?
Yippee-ki-yay, everyone.
We're already out to a great start.
Oh, yeah, this is great.
It's only going to get better.
It's real energy. It's the real. It's not fake out here. Okay. I've been doing this. We got to start off with the most important question.
Yeah.
How do you hydrate?
Do you think we could get Chuck Norris on the podcast?
That too.
Okay. Listen, I'm going to answer Toast's first because I like that one. I don't know about Chuck Norris, but I will tell you there's a chance, right? We in high school would at Tim Allen every day in a tweet from like each of our Twitters. We had like 14 people in this group chat. We would just say something wild to him and he responded. And he responded and said something like, this is a loaded question, isn't it? So there's a chance. You just got to be persistent enough and add him almost every day with like 15 people. And there's a chance he'll come on here.
Oh my God, it'd be awesome to get fucking Chuck.
The chances are slim, but never zero.
Exactly.
We want to get Chuck Norris for a D&D one shot where he is Chuck Prime. And
you got to get the voice actor for Optimus too.
Of course. Got to get them both.
At the end, they fuse.
Yep.
Sorry to spoil it in case it happens, but that's the ending.
No, it would just be dope to have Chuck Norris on playing Chuck Norris in D&D, kicking everyone's fucking ass.
Has that happened? I feel like something like that exists. Or maybe I'm thinking of Night Elf Mohawk that, God, what was that from? From World of Warcraft, like years and years ago. That was Mr. T. Had a World of Warcraft commercial where he played a Night Elf Mohawk. That was his class and race in WoW. And then they made an item in game where it was a grenade. And if you threw it on people, it would transform their character's head into a mask of a Night Elf with a Mohawk. And I want to tell you guys, I played WoW during that time, and that was the worst 6 months ever. Never once did my character not have a Night Elf Mohawk head. I had the coolest helmet, never saw it. It was just a Night Elf Mohawk.
That's fucking funny.
I missed that time.
Constant Mr. T.
Fucking wild, dude. I thought Chuck Norris did it, too. I couldn't remember.
Man, I'm going to get Chuck. We've already figured out what Chuck Norris is. It always goes like this. There's fucking 15 minutes of Chuck. Every goddamn time. Every goddamn time.
What did you ask, though, again, Coffee?
I was going to ask, what do you hydrate with in both in D&D and outside of D&D?
Oh man. D&D, it depends on the character. Usually I only drink water. When I'm not drinking water, I'm probably either drinking whiskey or a nice wheat ale. Or I'm sorry, not wheat ale, but a wheat beer. I like rye wheat beers. I think they're really good. Don't know why. They smell awful, but I think they taste good. I didn't like whiskey for a while, and then we moved back to Kentucky, and it just seemed like everything lined back up, and I'm back in the bourbon and the whiskey. So every session, I have a glass of whiskey or bourbon. And if it gets to be a long session, it's a good one, I pull out the second whiskey.
And oh.
Usually, I think they end well. I don't know. My notes stop getting written after the second glass comes out. So I don't know what happens after that. But in game, I've recently been playing an Inquisitor, which is like a palette. So we play Pathfinder. We haven't played D&D in like 3 to 4 years now. And an Inquisitor is pretty close to a cleric, I'll say. Maybe something in between, like a cleric and a rogue sometimes. But he's a good boy. He's a very nice, good, happy character. I feel like he strictly lives on bread and water. Just the vibe I get from him. He's just good. Maybe he has an ale if they're victorious and they survive the day. But besides that, he's an easygoing boy. Really? I found that I like happy characters. I kind of had this, like when I started, I played a lot of happier characters that didn't have as gruesome a backstory. And now as we've gotten more and more into it, I've found that whenever I play a sadder character, I don't enjoy the game as much. So I've transitioned back to trying to play happier characters. And I find I'm having way more fun in the games. So, wow. Yeah.
I mean, other than, I guess, when it comes to our D&D campaign, I think we don't really have any like super happy ones, but we don't really have any negative ones either. Ours, a lot of my characters' stories are very loaded. And if they aren't loaded, they're about to be loaded. is the best way to put it, because there's always shit happening. We play more of like, the best way to compare it is more like a real life-esque style. Like things are going on, you have no clue. These people don't know what's happening 90% of the time.
Sure.
But they're just focusing on what they can. I mean, Toast can... I was trying to look for a word, but my brain just...
Attest? Is it a test?
Attest to that, attest, yes, to 100%.
That's a good word. It's a great word.
Thank you. I feel like if you're an adventurer in D&D or whatever TTRPG you play, I feel like it's a horrible life, right? Like you don't have a bed most of the time. You're sleeping on the ground. You're eating whatever you find out there. It's all the little things we kind of skip past, I feel like, as players. But that's the worst thing about it.
That's what I'm saying, bro. The little things. I gave up, like, this last time that I leveled up, or the time before or whatever, but I gained a feat.
Yeah.
And I passed up some really good, like, defense and, like, attack, like, more damage and stuff. I gave all that shit up for chef skills.
Hell yeah, dude.
Because a man's got to eat, dude. Yes. You know what I'm saying? And Cam was like, you have all of these options. You're going to be a chef? Like, hell yeah, bro. Fuck it.
I had a rogue that had the chef feat. I get it.
And it's been beneficial, too. It turned out to be pretty good for the party and the campaign, as well as just me being a little bit silly.
I don't even remember what that feat does, but I know it was fun.
So what that feat does is after you finish a long rest, you can make 3 treats.
Treats?
Yeah. So 3 treats that give you temporary hit dice up to his level or something, up to a certain amount.
I'm pulling it up on my character sheet.
But so when he picked that, I was like, I mean, do what you want. But really, it's worked out because we have a druid who likes to hunt animals, and then we have a chef.
This is perfect.
It was. It just kind of fit right into the dynamic, and it's perfect because this wolf goes and kills fucking whatever she can find, and then brings it, and Damocles is like, "I'm serving it up," you know, and he can make like he like for his treats he does jerkies or like steaks. He does like smaller meals for the morning.
Smart.
And then that's your temporary hit dice if you eat it, and then like during his short rest, you know, whatever he has left over, you know, he can spend to give the rest of the party more health.
That's really
cool. What else the chef beat does.
That's yeah, really so cool. it gives you a replenishing meal and bolstering treats. A replenishing meal as a part of a short rest, you can prepare special food for 7 creatures. So yeah, I think it is based on your level.
Mm-hmm.
And then you regain, if you're using a hit dice to regain HP, you get an extra 1d8. Which can be super beneficial. I've seen it be absolutely nothing, though. the bolstering treats, I don't think I've used this one yet.
You've used it. You've used that one more than you have the short rest one.
Have I? Oh, okay.
Yeah, you've genuinely used the bolstering treats more than you have.
Oh, yeah, because this is the one that makes 3 special treats. And it gains 3 temporary HP. Use it as a bonus action. It lasts for 8 hours. So
it looks like it's kind of split up between a short rest or a long rest, which is interesting to me because you would think the long rest would give you the meal like time to do that, and the short rest you'd have enough time to make treats. But maybe there's a mechanic reason why. I don't know. I try to anytime I see things like this, I have to break it down in my head. Like, why would they not do it this way?
The way I see it is normally a short rest can last, it's about an hour. Yes. So when you take a short rest, you're taking about an hour. And that's about enough time for him to cook something up. So, oh, we're taking a short rest. We're trying to heal after this fight. Add a D8 to your health.
I guess you also don't like sleep during a short rest. You just hang out for an hour.
You're just taking a minute to collect yourself, regain some strength, and then go back into it.
Yeah. That makes some more sense, I guess. And then I guess with the treats, you wake up and it's like, oh, crap, I've slept for 8 hours. Let's make breakfast. Let's make a
little treat. Yeah, you know, or like, oh, let's make this, because then what that allows you to do is pretty much at the start of your day, you have temp HP, which is really good, especially if you know that you're going to get into a big conflict or you're going to like get into the nitty gritty and you're going to need those extra health points. I mean, it's only 3, but 3 can go a long ways.
Oh, yeah. Especially depends on what you get hit with, but I mean, 3 can do a lot.
3 can truly, it could literally mean the difference between life and death.
Never turn away free temp hit points.
No, and the food lasts for 8 hours, so you don't just have to eat it at that time. You can eat it whenever you need it. That's the other cool thing about it.
It's very Skyrim, how you can eat it as a bonus action. I like that in mid-combat, you're just like, hold on, I gotta eat this jerky real quick.
Yeah, that's how I felt when I read it. I was like, yo, pulling up the items menu immediately. the favorites in the bottom left corner.
I'm gonna going
straight to
wheel.
The stim pack. Hit me a pack. Cheese wheel, dude.
I'm gonna eat all 7 of these real quick. Full heal.
I always like the little videos where they do the animated Skyrim thing, and it's the Dragonborn, and he's like fighting a group of bandits, and time doesn't necessarily stop, but they are not attacking him.
Yeah,
and he's just shoving cheese wheels and cabbages into his fucking mouth with no sign of stopping.
That isn't it, like a guard or something. It's like through their perspective, and they turn around and look at him, like in horror that he's just devouring all this food and everything. I miss that time period when Skyrim was like fresh and memey. It's all been done now.
What do you mean? It still gets played on a daily basis. Everyone's just waiting for them to drop Elder Scrolls 6.
The memes have happened. You know what I mean? Like the cheese wheel or the.
I saw a TikTok yesterday. There was an Argonian running around with dual wielding 5.7s. I don't think it's all been done just yet.
I don't think it's all been done.
Yeah, the mod community is huge.
That is true. I haven't even played Skyrim since it's probably been a few years since I've touched Skyrim with or without mods. I should go back to that and never finish it again.
I've been playing the new remastered Oblivion, and that's been a fucking blast.
I haven't tried it. I mean, but at the same time, I'm just like, eh.
It's been a lot of fun. I've just been running around. So instead of going stealth archer like everyone does when you play Skyrim.
Yeah.
I didn't go stealth archer. I went stealth puncher. So I just run around and beat the living shit out of people with my fists. And then if I can't kill them with that, I just pull out a bow and shoot them in the head.
I was determined in one playthrough that I was going to do a unarmed only. And I remember like trying to research it all myself. And there was like, I think there's a heavy armor perk that your unarms deal a little bit more damage. And then I think if you were a Khajiit or a Argonian, you had like claws, so you do a little bit more. And that's about as far as I made it before having to like search through like spells and things like that to find new weapons or new ways to enhance them. But that's a good game. I need to go back and play it. It's been a hot minute. I'd probably really enjoy right now playing something like that again.
I've been enjoying just running around beating the living shit out of people. Because the one true thing that I love about Skyrim is it's so much like D&D where you can just walk around and just punch people in the face.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, the guard's going to come after you, but fuck it. You can just walk up and just cold clock someone.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm at the point where my hand-to-hand is 100 because I've literally been looking at the shit out of everyone.
They didn't make it very hard to get out of those situations in those games. No. I think even like bribing them was like 20 gold pieces or something. And it's like, yeah, that's totally fine.
Or you could just persuade them.
Yeah. And it's like, why do I even need to try to fight back? Just, how about you just leave me alone? I'm the Dragonborn. And they're like, oh, my bad. You're right. Continue to murder everyone in Whiterun.
Persuasion doesn't work. You can always just shout.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I've got tons of options in this game.
I know my favorite thing though was like, even though I would get stabbed by the guards, I would just fight them just for no reason. I knew I wouldn't win, but I would just do it till I died. It was a blast because then I got to escape prison.
Yeah, I think I only ever got caught once, and I think that might have been just to see what happened. Probably
my favorite was the Greybeards. Just walk up, upgrade your stealth to 100 and then walk away, do nothing else.
I did see, you know, I was the one that just said there's no more memory with it. I saw the other day that there was like some kind of bug in the game where you could spam candlelight. I can't remember what the spell was, but one of the little light spells.
Yeah, if you spam candlelight at a certain location in the map, you can upgrade your illusion to 100 in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, somebody's like, I just did it on accident when I was here. And then they uploaded it and everyone's like, this is crazy.
I know.
It's been out for like 10 years and they're still finding new things to do with it.
There's so many glitches. And then like being able to run around the map and find the trader chests and just loot the trader chests through the map.
It's like the best part of open world games is that you're never really done finding everything.
There's always a bug.
Oh yeah. There's always a bug in open world games. In a way I'm almost done with open world games. I feel like I've had so many recently to come out that I need something just more linear. And I felt like this when they announced the new Doom game. I was like, look, they were like, yep, it's going to be an open world. You can just go fight demons or whatever, wherever you want. And I was like, that's fine. But like, I feel like I have this in just a different game already. And then it's like, I've got Skyrim. If I play Oblivion, it is technically different, but it's also the same thing.
It's Doom, but just in fantasy times.
Exactly. It's like, I've got this already. I played a lot of Divinity 2 Original Sin. So when Baldur's Gate came out, it's like, I feel like I've played this, but it's different. So it's just, I don't know. I feel like I've been getting a lot of the similar feels with games recently. So I've been on the search for new stuff.
I felt very similar about Baldur's Gate. I played a lot of the Diablo games when I was younger, and even like the newer one that came out.
Yeah,
and then Cam put me on to Baldur's Gate 3, and I was like, I don't know, man.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've already done this before.
I've never played any of the Diablos. I just went straight into Baldur's Gate 3.
Well, if you pick up a Diablo game, you're going to feel like it's fucking Baldur's Gate.
Well, I probably will, but like for me, the one reason I love about Baldur's Gate is, I mean, again, it's like the whole Skyrim thing. It's just, there's so many things to do and they made it that way. And now that it's been, given to the mod community, the amount of potential to make, to have someone, you can pay like 50 people to make a custom campaign in Baldur's Gate for you. Like that is a logistic thing that they can do now, which I think is amazing. Like I've heard several things about like people working on Curse of Strahd. Mm. They're taking like book D&D book things and turning them into Baldur's Gate, which I think is, I truly think it's awesome, because it gives those people that don't have a table to play at, they can still download Baldur's Gate, download a mod, and then they can play D&D. Yeah, it's not perfect. It's not exactly like D&D, but you are still getting and you are still learning the D&D experience. I mean, that's truly how I got my girlfriend to really learn D&D, was we played Baldur's Gate for a whole fucking year.
I thought that was their intention when the game came out. I thought it was like Baldur's Gate 3 on the front and then DLCs afterwards of essentially like smaller, I guess, campaigns like Curse of Strahd that they would sell with it. And that was their way of kind of like keeping the game fresh and new, was just being like, oh, here's another new campaign and here's another new campaign. Similar to like how they did, I think Divinity did that. I think it had a few different DLC campaigns you could play through.
Just like Destiny 2. That's so like truly, truly for me, Baldur's Gate, other than it not being a first person shooter, like it reminds me a lot of Destiny 2, where there's always like there's a story you have to follow. You have to go to all these different places. It always ends up different, even though it doesn't at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, with Baldur's Gate, I got a little bit more of that. Every time you play, there's always going to be something different. Doesn't matter how you play, there's always going to be something different.
There's one decision you did differently than the last time, and something's going to work differently.
Yeah. Even if you didn't do it on purpose, that's the crazy thing about it. And that's what I love about that. And that's what I wanted to bring into D&D too. It's like decisions matter. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't think they matter greatly.
Telltale did it to me, bro. Yeah. Playing the Walking Dead games, yeah. The Wolf Among Us. I haven't played their Batman game and I'm still upset about that. I should look into that actually. Give me a second.
I forgot they did a Batman one.
I forget about it all the time. Then I start talking about Telltale and I'm like, Batman.
Okay, Fireball, I know you play Pathfinder,
yeah.
But if you were to make a D&D character right now, what would it look like?
God.
See, like just like off the top of your head, have you had any ideas?
Like you're talking like class or?
Like full, like doesn't have to be backstory, but class, race. I'll go first if you want me to, because I have one off the top of my head that I thought would be like a fucking great idea.
So I think I've got one, because I look at classes a lot when I'm doing content, because I'm always trying to double check and make sure I'm not doing something that's been officially printed. So I'm always trying to like make sure, and even when I find things that are officially printed, for example, I've been working on a new cleric one, and at like level 8, a lot of the PF like player's handbook ones, all of them at level 8 get Divine Strike, or a version at least of Divine Strike, but it's always like labeled Divine Strike. It's always like your weapon now deals like 1d8 radiant damage. So I always try to like find a way to, even if I need to kind of keep it similar, like paladins always have an aura. You know, there's like staples throughout a lot of the classes. I always go back and look around for something new, but I think if I went back and played right now, I'd probably go cleric. I really enjoy casting in 5e. When I don't have options in 5e, I find myself getting bored. I played a blood hunter one time and I was like, this is fun, but I do the same thing every combat where I just ignite my blade and then I run in there and I just spam attack over and over again until things fall over, and that's it. I played a rogue one time, same thing, except it was just once and I was aiming for a sneak attack. So I need like a caster to kind of give myself like a little bit of oomph. And I love the divine classes. I think there's so much fun. There's so much RP potential.
So I made, in our class, in our campaign, we have two completely custom made subclasses.
Good.
And then we have our two standards, of course. Toast is a new player, and our other players, Hunters, are new players. So we didn't really get really in depth into that. I mean, me and Hunter have spoken many times about him switching Because he wants to change it up. He wants to experience something different. And it, and with what he wants with his character, it's going to play perfectly into what we want to do.
Sure.
But the custom subclass for Quill and Stygius is called a Rune Wizard. Ooh. That is a subclass. So okay. he chose a hard magic system. Like, not just like your normal hard magic, but difficult magic system, where he genuinely needs materials and his magic is not based off of arcana. He still has a great arcana, this and that, but he is will-based. That's what... So if you listen to our stuff, I mean, a lot of our stuff is very much... if you listen to Stygius, his is all charge-based. So if he carves a certain rune into a rock, like Chromatic Orb, which has been done multiple times, he can have a certain amount of charges depending on the material, and depending on that material also depends on the strength of it and how many charges he can put into it. Along with that, like, he has the ability to do so many more creative things with his spells than just, like, he can make himself magical items in different ways than an artificer can, because an artificer just enchants it. He physically has to carve something into the material in order for it to work, and there's always a chance of failure.
I like that. Is it Arcane Mark? Is that a cantrip in this, in 5e?
Arcane Mark is not. So what we truly did is I had to make him a custom. So, like, you know how wizards normally have a focus?
Yeah.
His focus is also a weapon, in a sense. And he can also put his will into his focus. So what he has is a carving tool that allows him to focus his will into it to carve certain spells. Because so in our world, we have a lot more divine. There's a lot of divine. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of clerics. There's a lot of paladins. Very few magic users. There's a couple wizards and stuff like that. But the magic arts are very limited. So when I brought that up to him, that was what he came up with. And I'm like, that's great. You know, that ties into a whole nother level. And then Quill, I wish I could talk about with Toast here, but hers is a complete, it's a druid. Okay. But it's like no other druid I've ever played with, ever seen played. It is, she isn't a normal druid at all. If you listen to our stuff, you don't hear her change into anything else but something.
Well, Toast, you tell me, I guess, then, since it's a secret, what does she do? What's different about her?
Her thing is, I mean, Toast knows there's a curse on her.
Okay.
So her wild shape doesn't work in the way you would traditionally think. Instead of one thing going to another, it's the opposite.
What do you mean by that? One thing going to another.
So, for example, Toast, plug your ears.
Toast, turn your brain off.
Instead of turning into... This is crazy. Instead of turning into, like, a beast, she can only turn into...
Send me a DM on Discord when I can put my headphone back in.
I'll just give him a thumbs up. Don't worry.
Wait, is this going to be a spoiler for the viewers, too?
Yeah, this is a little spoiler for the viewers.
Oh, okay. Everybody shut your ears.
Instead of turning... I mean, if you listen, you can hear this context. She can only turn into one thing, but opposite. So instead of turning into a beast, she can turn into a human form.
Oh, shit. That's pretty cool. I like that a lot. Okay. Toast, come back.
Oh, hold on. I have to actually send him a fucking Discord.
Yeah, he's like all mad. He's moved on. He's playing Skyrim right now. He's downloading all the NSFW mods.
There we go. I know he is.
What you said, though, kind of, I forgot I even made this. It was an older subclass I made for Druid. I wanted to make a Druid subclass where you could transform into, or you couldn't do beasts or anything like that, or magical beasts. Instead, you get, if I'm remembering it correctly, because it has been a very long time since I made it, you were given options for, like, fiends and aberrations, and it was the Circle of the Eldritch Horror. And the whole thing was like, you were almost like a warlock druid. I think I gave them Eldritch Blast at level one. But the whole thing is you couldn't turn into animals. You were like almost like cursed or like occultist druid, essentially. And you could turn into like fiends. I had to be super careful writing it because I realized the difference in animals versus like fiends as like the CR goes up. They're vastly different. And I was like, oh shit, I can't just, you know, use a similar system. I was like, I have to nerf the fiends that are available. Right, but I really like that one. That one was cool. I might actually revisit that and see if I can upgrade it any.
I think that's a really cool idea. I love having the ability. Ooh, excuse me. I love having the ability because druids truly, I think, are one of the most fluid classes. I mean, you can do so much with them. You can give them so much and it doesn't seem out of their will hold. I mean, you can do so much. Like, again, on that subclass that we had made, I mean, there are things that she's going to get to here soon that are going to be game breaking. All of my characters are running double their CR. Their rated CR, I have to double it because of their power level in a fight is two times the amount that their normal CR level should hold.
Do you feel like that happens in a lot of D&D stuff, though?
I feel like per DM, it depends.
Yeah.
100%. But for mine, for heaven's sakes, I say this every time, they killed a fucking young dragon, deadly fight at CR, that was a CR, I think, 7.
Yeah.
And they were level 5.
I think we did something similar in our game, and we went into it with the same mindset of half of us are dead. And we came out unscathed completely. And we were like, how does this work?
I got two rounds. I got two rounds. Yeah. I got to get my acid breath off and then it was done. Like, I mean, that was all the dragon did was get an acid breath off, land, and then get an acid breath off. That was all the dragon did. And truly, I think it does happen, but then DMs find that balance. And then I feel like there's other DMs that just way over level everything. Oh, yeah. Like they're constantly too high. For me, it takes a couple fights in order to figure out that balance. You're always going to have that imbalance until you figure out how the party works. And then as a DM, you need to strategize. Okay, I don't want these to be easy fights. I want 90% of my fights. Well, I mean, depending on how you want to do it. If you want like, I want my encounters when they're on the road to be easy because I don't want it to take forever. You know, that's one thing. It's meant to be an encounter. It's meant to just be along the road. But you still want it to be a little bit of a challenge, not just like a blow by and then continue. You want it to be like, it's going to take them maybe about 5 rounds max, but then they're going to buy it.
Yeah.
You know, but then I want my actual fights to be nuts. Like I want them to be like, there is a constant chance of they're going to die. And if they die, I mean, that happens.
That's the game.
Kind of like the one coming up in our next episode.
Mm-hmm. There's the plug. Hit that subscribe button.
Follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts.
What was I gonna say? What level are they?
So they are currently coming up to this next great turn of events. They are level 8.
Okay, so I remember
we're only 18 episodes in, but there's a lot that's gone on.
Okay, so what level do they start at?
They started at level 4.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
So they're higher level, but there's a reason because a lot of people stop at level 12.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for a stop at level 12.
Yeah, I think
I want level 12 to be like maybe a longer lasting level.
Right.
Like, I mean, for heaven's sakes, how long have you guys been on level 7, Dost?
Jesus Christ, I feel like it's been... I've been level 7 since I switched from pen and paper to electronic notes, so... Let's see. I can tell you how many episodes it's been. It's been 7 episodes.
7 episodes.
That's
and we play like 2-3 hour sessions. Like, I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. We play once a week at level 7. I remember when we were probably around like level 10 or 11 in our first campaign. I remember reaching out to my DM and I was like, listen. I feel like it's just too easy. Some of these encounters, because we were still learning how to balance. This was like our first game as players and as DMs. And I was like, I feel like we're able to like have no problem with some of these fights. And he was like, I agree. I can't tell you what's coming, but you know, like, I think I figured it out. And just like as doing my own research and then what I would run as one shots. When you're able to start putting casters in against the enemies, I find that's when the fights start kind of turning. And it's like, oh crap. There's a guy that can just like AoE us down every turn and we have to deal with him or he will kill 100%. Us. Yeah.
100%. So, and so I went with a different strategy though, because I, then again, I don't have a lot of magic users. Like
sure. Yeah, we're not dealing with mainly divine. Yeah.
So like one of the biggest threats they actually faced, which was a random and like, which was just part of like a short thing that I wanted to, but I had, new monster.
Horrible.
New monster from the monster manual. Uh-huh. It was the questing knight.
I know exactly what we're talking about here.
I
hate it.
I love the questing knight. One of the greatest. I mean, it's a CR, I think, 14.
I'm looking it up. I don't think I know this one.
But questing this it's knight. A new one. I think it's a, I don't remember what CR or CR 16. It's right around there. CR 14, 16.
CR, this is a CR 12 in the monster manual for 25.
Okay, yeah, I think they were level, you guys were level 6 when they fought that. Okay, yeah, so that makes about okay. sense. But I one-shot Toast's character, one round, that's all it took me. And I did, I think, a total of 109 damage, and he prevented, what was it, 10 of it?
Or I couldn't even tell you.
But I ended up doing 91 damage to him. In one turn.
This guy's a pretty crazy creature. Like, he can just stand and bang, as we say.
Like, I mean, that's what the new monster manual is. You have so much more of that.
Yeah.
And that's great for me, because especially where I'm mainly divine-based, because mm-hmm. I took Greek mythology and Faerun Pantheon, and I slammed them together. Instead of the Faerun Pantheon being able to summon Celestials and stuff like that, the people are their weapons. Use their followers, just like the Greek gods. Like the Greek gods, yes, they fought wars on their own. They can hold themselves, mm-hmm. but they never summoned anything. They did it on themselves. And if they did have people fight for them, it was actual people that they were under, that they had control over, in a sense, that were following them.
I've been kind of working on my, I guess, my homebrew world. I've been trying to turn it into 5e content. And I'm kind of going that same route where the Pantheon I have right now could just jump in and do it, you know, if they wanted to. But I've been trying to do more of the Pantheon is more hands-off. And they're just like, you guys, it's your problem. Like, you guys figure it out. And if you want divine ability, you know, you can ask and gain favor by it or merit or whatever. But essentially, we're hands off. Like, we're not going to intervene a lot. We have our own problems to deal with what I've written it as. And it's like, I kind of like that more. Like, the more I'm getting into it, even though I guess 5e doesn't have a ton of like gods just showing up as much, but there's a lot more, I guess, higher level threats in 5e, in like the history of it in the worlds and stuff. But I kind of like the hands-off Pantheon. And it's just like, you just have the followers and you got to deal with them.
See what I think, you know, is like, there's a lot of that. I mean, for example, I Critical Role is great, but then again, they're a studio podcast.
Yes.
Okay.
They got the budget.
They have the budget to do it. For someone that pays for everything,
yeah.
Me and him both, we pay for everything. We're doing what we can. And I wanted to come at a completely different approach, because I really haven't heard many stories where the gods the gods respect their followers to like a greater representation than just, oh, you are my chosen, you know, like to be a chosen in this world, you run it. For example, part of my lore is that a war happened over the lands, causing this giant island to split off this other landmass that was full of chaos. You know, it's this other landmass that has been untouched by man because it is unlivable because of what's there. So all of the gods, after fighting, had broken this piece off, and then they were fighting over it. And they came to an agreement after dealing with some of the more evil-esque, not as in balance, you know, gods. They still gave them their space, but they didn't give them a place. And instead of looking as the gods as a family, I looked at them as a bunch of people, just people. Like, they're just people that had come to this place and created. There was one that created it. There were two that created it. And these other ones showed up and were like, okay, we're going to try to run this. The other two left, as far as everyone knows. And so it's just, if you are a chosen of one of these gods, you hold such a great manner. For example, we have kingdoms based off of the gods' names. Not every town is. I mean, we have some towns that are like normal, but a lot of the towns have a name after a god. They have the name in there, and there is a representative of that god there. And that's who runs the town.
Ooh, so it's more like religion-based, maybe, government?
Yes.
I'll say that loosely, maybe? Yeah.
Yes, so religion-based government to the T. Like, for example, the Tempest is the god of war. Yeah. So the person that runs the kingdom of Tempest is a general.
Yes, that makes sense.
Is the highest, a commanding general.
I didn't realize it until you started talking about this. I've built my world very similarly to Greek stuff, and I didn't even realize it. So I've kind of like written a, I think it's 15 pages right now of just backstory of like the opening of the world. And now I'm kind of fleshing out moments of history. And that's like kind of how I'm deciding like the content that comes out is just, I pick a moment of the history that I like, and then I just go deep into it. But the way I did my pantheon of gods is like, there was this light source. She made all the planets. I say she, it's an it. It made all the planets and it decided to start trying to like make life. So it had its own companion. It made like the first living creatures on, we'll call it Earth, because I'm still pitching like three or four names for it. It made Earth. It was too powerful to like get near the creatures, but from afar it could like observe them. It made its first humanoid, and then it made a shell for itself to go down onto the planet. It like lived on the planet for a while with him. Essentially, I picked Adam, you know, Adam and Eve story to kind of start this off. I was like, let's use the real life history lessons to try to make something from this. The light ends up leaving the planet due to, I guess, conflict between it and its first creation. It feeling bad, it made a second creature, which was more like a human. That thing ended up getting kind of, I guess, ill-willed into doing, or I guess creating children to fight against the light. And then it made, I think I've got 9 gods in my pantheon, if I'm remembering them all. All 9 gods represent all 9 races that are going to live on the planet. They end up fighting against the light, drinking the blood of them, and then they become gods. And so like, they're all like Greek mythology children of each other. Like they're all related, even though there's like a dragonborn, a human, you know, like the father was like a mixture of different creatures. So I was like, it'd be cool if all of his children spawns, if the mother was like a human and he's like a mongrel man from Pathfinder, that they all come out as like different races of things. So like that's how I figured out my races. But now I've got this kind of Greek pantheon, all of these gods. The mom ends up becoming the villain and almost like the mother of monsters, and she starts spawning her own creations of life. And now they've created humanity to kind of like fight back against these monsters that she's creating. But that's all they really want to do. Besides that, they're just gearing up to make sure she doesn't wipe out everything. But I didn't realize that it was very Greek mythology feeling pantheon until just now. And I was like, shit, they're all children and they're all born of this one figure. And that's kind of like the story. but they all like hold dominion in like different parts of the world. They're like known but not known at the same time, because I like it when like Zeus would like come down as an eagle and he would live as a like with the people as a human, and then he would just disappear when he was bored or whatever. And I was like, that's what I want to do with these. I want them to exist, but people don't know that.
Right.
Like they're almost mythological tales at that point.
And I feel like that's an awesome concept. I mean, for me, I took like more, like I think total gods, I have about 26. So I have a couple customs, and then I have a couple from Baldur's Gate, you know, because the Faerun Pantheon doesn't have them all. But I took some, and what I wanted them to be is these. So there was these two forces that made the creations, made balance and humanity, and made chaos and disruption. Yes. And then I wanted to have these invaders, as a sense, as these other gods. These other gods have invaded this planet after these two have supposedly left and have done their justice and have gone to create on more. These gods have came in and invaded and have taken control of the people that they left to have free will and do what they want. Now it's coming back, and now everything is under this control. They keep fighting over this. It is a constant war between them because they're not all from the same place.
That makes
sense. Can't see eye to eye because they aren't eye to eye. Each of them sees themselves as a higher input for a certain thing, and they learned how to collaborate and like, okay, we are this, you know, this is what we control, and we all agree on this. It's that alliance sense, but alliances can be fragile in the brink of destruction.
Yes. I was trying to like figure out in my world how I wanted, I guess, the people of the planet to act with each other. And the way I kind of wrote it when the world kind of started was the gods came down, they made their angels, which would become minor gods that represent a value of each one of the, like, their beliefs. They taught the first humans. I wanted to like time skip the caveman era and like the dark ages and kind of get us to a quicker medieval sense where there's kind of a sense of technology and they kind of know what's going on. So I wanted to skip a lot of the boring stuff. And I kind of like sat there one day and I was thinking about it and I was like, well, if they did this and they know what's up and they know they can believe in like their faith and everything, they would never fight each other. So I figured after so many hundreds of years, eventually, if the gods became less and less involved, eventually one of them would be like, well, I think I should rule this kingdom. I think I'd be better than you. And that I think naturally, as like humans do, I think conflict just happens because they're imperfect. And that's one thing I wanted to stick with my gods, was I wanted them to be imperfect. And that's so they're always morally flawed. And there's always like something that's wrong with them, right? It's like, like the dragon one, he's the one that ends up killing the light. And he, because he does that, he's almost looked at as like the leader because he's the one that did the killing blow. And now he has the responsibilities on his shoulder. And so he can never show any weakness and he constantly has to be at peak. And then that brings out that dragon pride in him. And that's how like why all the dragon race in that world, just like in a lot of other fantasy, they're very prideful creatures. And I was like, I have to like find ways for all of them to do that. Like the orc god, I wanted him to, in my world, I wanted the orcs to be like samurais. I thought it'd be a little different approach than just like evil, rampaging, ravaging creatures. So I wanted them to be like samurais. And I was like, so he is honorable. He grew up in the swamps when he was a child. So he fought and lived off the land and he respected it. And because he had to like live with like alligators and stuff like that, he learned patience. But when he also learned that because he lived with alligators, he had to be ruthless. So when he made orcs, I'm going to totally spoil it because I think it's fucking sick. I don't know if it's that cool. The way their society works is there is the honor bound orcs, which are very respectful. They're very samurai and they're very cool. And there is the, essentially the ruthless Genghis Khan orcs. And the honor bound ones kind of rule the inner circle, and they're chill and they're very inviting and they're very peaceful. They're very powerful. And the Kangaskhan ones rule the outside ring of their civilization, and they'll totally fight for power. And once every year they have a tournament, and the three, oh no, what is it? They put a representative up for the honor bound and a representative up for the ruthless, and they fight. So the kingdom is actually ran by three different orcs. There's always one ruthless. There's always one honor bound. And whoever wins that tournament is the third seat. So that year might be two ruthless ones and one honor bound. And that year they may be very aggressive to all their neighbors. Just because that's what it is. And they respect each other because that's just what the rules are. Even though they like may not agree with each other, that's their rules. So that was like part of his struggle was he was like, God learned how to be ruthless, but at the same time he was like, but there needs to be honor and it needs to be patient. So like that's his flaw, is he wants to be ruthless. He wants to kill them. He wants to be aggressive, but he knows he has to be patient. And I've tried to find a way to do that with every single one of them. And it's been a slow process, but it's been a fun one.
That's nuts. I mean, for example, I have like hundreds of pages of lore. It took me a year to build this. But I love that. And for mine, it was just like really defining like these gods, truly. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do they represent? I mean, I love the flaw thing. People are flawed. I feel like the gods should be just as flawed as people, because then again, their flaws is they came from these different places where they were mm-hmm. the ruling power. And mm-hmm. they left that because that was destroyed for some reason, or there was a reason to abandon it. You know, they got overthrown, they got overtaken, you know, they were the high, and then they come to this all, and they all have this high end standpoint, but their flaws are the things that are very underlooked. They're not seen. Mm-hmm. And the people that they choose have the same flaws as them. They are like identical to them, but that's what I feel like that gives it the more humanity aspect. Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, humans are flawed. Yeah. Our God is flawed. So why shouldn't all gods be flawed? Because truly no one is perfect, even a god, because a god can't control everything in the face of chaos.
Yeah. Even like how you use Greeks as your kind of inspiration. I don't know a lot about the true actual, I guess, written history of their religion, but I mean, you go back to a lot of their movies. Zeus was a whore.
Definitely.
He was just down there doing business. Poseidon, if you thought you were good in the ocean, if you thought you were a good sailor, he was pissed. Hated that, you know, his pride of ruling the ocean. He hated you. The story of Odysseus, he fucking hated Odysseus just because he was good out there. Hades is like the only one that seems decent half the time, except for when he traps his wife down there for 6 months of the year. But like, I think they're a good example too, because like they have all these flaws in their stories.
It's funny that you say Odysseus, because our island is called the God Islands of Odysseus.
That's awesome.
It's spelled a little bit differently.
Yeah.
It's spelled Odeecas.
Okay.
And I'm dyslexic, so it's not like I really care, but that's how it's spelled. And I did that for the reason of it brings that little bit of like, you know, if you know what I'm saying, like Odysseus and Odysseus are two different things,
yeah.
You know, but truly that was the whole basis of, I wanted to do a really God-force campaign where it's like life, but if life was a constant struggle of power between people that, I mean, it's every day, it's a constant power struggle, but there's a bigger power struggle even above them.
I like that. That makes sense to me. Cause that's probably how it would happen.
It's constantly a power struggle.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Especially if there's like any kind of God like pantheon thing that there's like a head honcho.
Even
there's
when
always
there's just
somebody
one.
Out there that's like, I want to take that seat.
Even when it's just one, even if it's just one god, there's always a power struggle because there's always something contesting that.
Yeah.
And even if it's not a god, again, D&D, the one thing that there is, I mean, it's in everything, and it's, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I think it's great. It's a power struggle. And I think depending on how you play the power struggle really helps. I think D&D is both a space for people to really explore them, like explore themselves and really learn on how they feel about certain situations and really put themselves into a campaign where they can find, okay, this is my power struggle that I face on a daily basis. And now I'm going to fight that in this fake world. So that way, when I go out in real life, you know, I mean, yeah, I may have fought this thing in fake world, but you just learn. I mean, it's just a simple thing of you're just like, it's this constant power struggle and okay, my character does this, but how would I translate that? You know, I translate it into real life and okay, this is what I would do. And then you can handle that. I feel like the D&D community is a great thing. It helps people cope with the ability to like, okay, I need to find a way to just get this anger of this energy. Power struggle out.
Yeah.
This energy. Yeah. Cause it builds up and then you just find a place to expend it.
Yes. Yes. Hopefully in a not evil way or overly destructive way.
Even evil. I mean, I've seen some great evil campaigns. Like I've read some really awesome ones and I think it's really awesome to see the opposite end. Like it's always going to be a power struggle, like a bunch of villains trying to take down the good guys because the good guys are getting they're becoming evil in their own ways.
Yeah. I mean, as a player, I've seen players that have been annoyed at situations. So they'll just like ruin the situation to speed it up because they're like, I don't like what's going on. I'm just going to trigger the trap on purpose. It's like, no, don't do that.
No, the whole point of it is to figure out a creative way to deal with it in your own way.
Mm-hmm. We had a guy
set it on fire.
We had a guy in one campaign. Detect and know that a ring we found was like a +1 ring of protection in 5e. And because we didn't want to go do something else, he just kept it for himself. And I was like, ah, that's lame, dude. I was like, we're handing out all the loot or we're doing this thing over here. And it's like, you just don't, he did it because he didn't want to do it. Like, I remember like, it wasn't like, he just didn't feel like trying to share it with us or anything like that. He could have easily been like, I found this cool thing. Cause that's like who his character was, but the situation turned sour and he was like, I'm keeping this for myself. Or he did something. He sold it. He scrapped it. I can't remember exactly what happened, but I remember thinking about that and being like, God, that sucks. Somebody could have used this. This could have been helpful in some way. But I like it when, in the writing aspect, when you could turn that energy into something good or bad or evil, whatever way it kind of comes out. In a writing aspect, I love it. I think it's fun.
I mean, like, one of the biggest things is creativity in mine. Like, I love this. Like, if the more creative you are, the more things that I'll let you do. Because it's not just the rule of cool for me. It's the rule of, what do you truly want to do and what do you want to see your character do? Mm-hmm. I mean, Damocles is trying to currently get a jar.
My character hold a decanter of unlimited mayonnaise.
So he can cause chaos with the decanter of unlimited mayonnaise.
I will not tell anyone what I want to do with this decanter of mayonnaise. It's all anyone wants to know. I'm going to withhold that information. I refuse to give any sort of tidbits or anything about it. I want it and I will find a way to get it.
I think he's gonna make the best perfect sandwich shop there is possible. He's gonna use all that mayonnaise
is a good chef's tool.
There it all ties back together.
Yes, it does. And that's why I should have it.
I'm the DM. And I the reason why I don't just give it to him is because he hasn't described exactly what he wants to do, other than I want to do it for evil. He's like, I want to do evil, chaotic things with this thing. And I'm like, no. Like,
maybe make some sandwiches on the road. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many uses for unlimited mayonnaise.
It's practically a grease spell too. He could just easily just blah, 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 drop it down.
That's what I mean. An unlimited decanter of mayonnaise, okay, can go a long ways. And he hasn't given me like a specific great reason on why he should have it. He's just said, I want to do evil things with this. So I said, well, you can have it, but you got to make it. Like, I'm giving you the option, but I'm making it. So since you won't tell me, I'm going to make it. So you have to make it.
You could always Bagman it too. Is Bagman a real thing or is that a myth? Am I thinking of the wrong thing in the 5D world? There was a creature. Somebody came up. It may be homebrew. It's essentially like the false Hydra, like meme. But it was it's a creature. It's like some kind of aberration that exists inside bags of holding. And at night it'll just like wake up and leave if it wants to, or it'll eat the things that are in the bag. Like he exists inside the bag. And if the players like accidentally find him in the bag, he retaliates almost like a mimic in Dark Souls. If you played Dark Souls and you like accidentally open a mimic chest and it like attacks and latches out at you. That was essentially what I think the Bagman was, if I'm remembering it right. But you could give him the jar mayonnaise and you could see what happens. And then if it gets bad, you just Bagman him. The Bagman just shows up and eats all his mayonnaise.
Just Bagman him. Good. No, I'm going to dirt man him.
Oh, no. That sounds way worse.
Give a little peep, a little dirt underneath your pillow for the dirt man.
Toast, I wanted to ask you this earlier, and this is completely off topic. What's your favorite Diablo game?
I'm privy to 3, but I really like the animation style in 4.
Yeah.
I think the way they did classes in 3 were by far my favorite.
Yeah.
I found the classes in 4 to be a little boring.
Yeah.
Honestly. Same. Like, there was a lot of options. You know, there's a lot of ways you could go, a lot of different upgrades, a lot of different builds, but they all, at the end of the day, they all felt the same.
That's the biggest problem.
And I didn't like that.
I agree. I'm totally there with you. I started with 3. And I think I fell in love with it immediately. I played Witch Doctor the whole time. I switched to a few other classes throughout it, but I loved 3. It just felt so fun. And even though there were like, I guess, meta builds that you could do for every class that was always perfect, there were always those weird ones. And playing with friends, I never felt that pressure that I had the role, like the perfect build every time.
Yeah.
And you could get weird with it. Like I had the build with, what was it? It was where you could just like constantly keep summoning those, like, I think they were called fetishes. Those little creature people with blow darts.
Oh, they're almost like Ewoks.
Yeah. So they were weird little creatures. And I was like, this is so stupid. And you can make like 12 of them and they just go on a fucking tangent. I was like, that's what I want. I want just to build that. And I had some friends that were like, this is stupid. We're never going to complete these gates if you do this. And I was like, yeah, but it's so funny when they're going all over the place haywire. And so that's how I
look
at
my Ewok army.
Exactly.
Destroy the demons.
I would call it, I don't want to, what did I call it? I had like, I think every summonable creature, I had it on my bar. And I think I maybe had one attack at that point, but I had like the zombie dogs. I had the gargantuans. I did the thing where the gargantuan would shrink into 3 little ones. I had as many creatures as I could. That was for me. That was peak. It was so stupid.
I think
I ended up playing wizard to try hard a little bit, but it was just so like, you could just blink around everywhere and instantly kill anything. And I was like, this is fun, but I've got like 30 creatures on this other character I could just show up with and fight with. And that's way funnier.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, I'm with you. I think 3 was my favorite. I never got to play 2. I heard 2 was really good though.
2 was really good, but I'm a slut and I need my good graphics. So
did you play the remaster? I'm privy to 3.
Of 3?
Of 2.
No, I did not. I didn't even know they remastered that one. I know they revamped 3 for like the Series X or whatever, but
I know they did that. I think they did something with 2. I'm gonna Google it.
Yeah, they remastered 2. I know that. I saw that.
Oh, yeah, they did. Diablo 2 Resurrected. I don't know if it looks good, though. I just remember it being out. And I was like, maybe I'll go back and
try. I mean, it looks like Diablo.
Yeah, it's what it is. I was not a fan of 4. I got bored quickly of it.
I didn't even finish it.
No, I have no idea how the game went. I maybe did the first 2 acts, and then I was like, I'm done. This is it.
I don't even know if I got any progress into the second act, really. I think I got to the bald guy.
Yeah.
He's got his son.
Yeah.
He's like a cleric. He wears the red robes, like the red garb. Fuck, what's his name?
That sounds vaguely familiar, but I couldn't tell you anything past that. Oh my god, the resurrected version of Diablo 2 looks like D3. I gotta play this now. I had no idea it looked this good. Well, I guess I know what I'm spending my money on. No more magic cards this month. I'm just getting Diablo 2.
There you go.
But yeah, I was a big Diablo fanboy. I was I was going to play Guild Wars 2. I had that on pre-order, and I was playing the beta, and I was like playing with a bunch of people that I did PvP with in World of Warcraft. And a lot of my at-home friends were like, "No, we're all getting Diablo 3, and we're just gonna play that." And I immediately went to the store and refunded Guild Wars 2 for Diablo 3, and I'm so happy I did. I went back later and played Guild Wars 2, and I did not have a great time. But I've played Diablo 3, I don't know, 50 times through and through. It's just a fantastic game.
That's like me and Baldur's Gate 3.
It's Donan. That's his name.
Donan?
Donan. He's like not fucking important at all. He dies almost immediately.
Oh, this but guy.
That is the only thing I can remember.
Yeah.
After you get out, you escape like the crazy people in the forest or whatever. Yep. You go do fuck all, and then you meet Donan, and then I deleted it from my console.
He reminds me of the old guy from 3, whose name I'm forgetting. He's the grandfather. He's like a wizard. Yeah, I can't remember his name. It's going to kill me. I'm going to remember it later when I'm sleeping. I'm going to wake up in a cold sweat and I'm gonna be like, it's him.
Like him. That. Oh, I know who he is.
I didn't forget.
That's funny.
Well, Fireball.
Yes.
I think we're closing off our time here.
Yes. This was a quick hour.
This was a quick hour. We would love to have you back. I mean, we've had one repeat, but we need more repeats because there's so much more we'd love to talk about.
No, I'm ready. You guys know what my rate is, so you know. Perfect. You know how perfect. To pay me.
I know. I'm broke. Oh, expensive.
That new Final Fantasy Magic the Gathering set came out, and
I don't do magic for that exact reason.
You already talked about Legos being expensive. The Final Fantasy.
You know what I do? Dice Thrones. Have you played that?
Which one?
Dice Thrones.
Dice Thrones. Is that a mobile game? Or is that
No. No, no, no. It's a board game and it's addicting as fuck. Dice Thrones fucking sponsor us because that'd be awesome. Because Dice Thrones is an amazing
game. Oh, I think I've seen these boxes before. Like, I've seen the game in person before.
Yeah, it's so much fun. Once you start playing and once you start figuring it out, it's a blast. Well,
shit. Oh my God, these are expensive.
But they're not, though. They're not, though. They're $20 and you get 2 characters and you can fucking play against someone. Fucking E.
This is 30.
$30? Okay, $30. Okay, $30. You can go on Amazon. They're like $20 or $28.
This one says 99. Yeah, it's just the season the one. It's like every character that came out.
That's first. The season one. So yeah. So if you go to DiceStones.com, you can find the boxes, which you can get all 8 characters of those boxes. And then they also have Marvel. They have like the X-Men set. They have a Deadpool edition. They have
Marvel is kind of mid though, to be honest.
I mean, you don't get fucking it's action.
Cyclops, that's cool.
I mean, the X-Men set alone would get me. I'd be in for it.
X-Men. That was the same way Toast was. I told him about X-Men. Set. You get like Wolverine, Cyclops. You get like all of the like Storm.
I see Storm. I see Gambit. I see everybody. Yep. I want on this box.
Yep. And then like their other characters are just as good though. It reminds me a lot of like D&D, but in the sense of like more of like a quick hour board game with two people. You get more than two people and it goes on for a little bit longer. Me and Toast have played a couple of times with my girlfriend. We play Dice Thrones quite a bit.
I know you're trying to end it, but this reminds me, there's another game called Red Dragon Inn. Have you guys played that?
Oh, I played Red Dragon Inn. It is a fucking... That's so fun. That's a fun game. We only have the first box because we want to get the rest. We truly do. We want to get all 12.
I've got a friend that's got the entire set. Like, really? I mean, he's got it all. And we went up to his house one time, and he's just got a giant box, and it's fully sorted, and everything's put together, and it's a good time. We get new
people. Red Dragon is a blast. It is a fucking blast.
I think it's fun that you can play without drinking, but if you turn it into an actual drinking game,
I know.
It's the craziest thing.
Yeah, if you turn it into a drinking game, you get hammered quick.
Oh, yeah. It's a good game, though. It's very fun.
It's a blast. It's a blast. Well, thank you, Fireball.
Yes.
It's been an absolute pleasure to have you. Please do let us know if you want to come back. We'll have to schedule something.
Sure. Thank y'all for having me. Toast, it was nice meeting you, finally.
Hell yeah, man. It's nice to meet you, too.
It was nice meeting y'all.
But go ahead.
No, that was it. I was saying, do I have to just leave or
No. I'll end it right here and then we'll...
I didn't know what to do. I was like, do I just run? You're good. I'll just leave my camera on. I'll leave. I don't know.
No, you're good. Thank you all for listening and watching or however the hell you listen to this fucking shit. I mean,
if you just walk out of the door really fast, we can put some outro music behind you. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I forgot these openings.
Thank you all for watching. Please keep coming back for our absolute caffeinated chaos and see you on the next one. Peace out.